We have like three levers that we have. We have BCBA case capacity, mm-hmm. RBTs that can staff those cases, and clients. And the challenge always has been trying to keep those three as close together as possible.
Right.
2 years ago, when we had excessive turnover, I had a whole bunch of clients with no RBTs running them. Then we found ourselves, you know, we had cases to fill, and you relax your standards a little bit. Some of those people work out and some of those people don't work out. And then you kind of get in this runaway turnover thing where the more turnover you have, the more turnover you're going to have.
Yes.
Until you just fill up with quality people.
Hi, my name's Steven.
Hi, I'm April.
This is the 3Pi² ABA Business Leaders podcast, where we discuss topics on how to create and grow an ethical and sustainable ABA practice.
Together, Steven and I owned a 7-figure ABA practice that provided both clinic and in-home services.
3Pi² has helped over 900 ABA practices start up and expand with our comprehensive products and services geared specifically to ABA. Now, let's get to the podcast.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to ABA Business Leaders, brought to you by 3Pi². I'm April.
Steven.
And today with us, we have some very special guests. We have Maria Zito and Chris Robinson from ABA in Pennsylvania. And today, they're just going to share their story. And we're also going to do some consulting and chatting. And, you know, we all want to know what's going on at the ABA shop down the street, right? And so this is a really great way for us to have that conversation. And, yeah. So, Maria is the program director at ABA. And would you like to tell us a little bit about yourself, Maria?
Yeah, sure. I've been a BCBA for about 8 years now. I have been with ABA for the last 5 years. And I actually previously worked for you guys down in Northern Virginia for a couple years when I first started out as a BCBA. And I've been in the field for about 10 years total right now.
Awesome. And Chris is the owner. Chris, would you like to tell us more about yourself?
Sure. I've been BCBA since 2011, which sounds like a really long time as I'm saying it. First time I'm saying it in 2025, like
right.
Every year, like ads, like, wow, really? We opened ABA 5-6 years ago. And we work with, we focus on home services for kids with intensive needs.
Great. Oh, that's really challenging to do home services with kids with intensive needs. What age groups do you guys work with?
Primarily that 3 to 5 range, but we go into school age as well.
Okay, great. Well, so Chris and I know each other from a while back. Chris reached out and we did some like work together through 3Pi², and then as Maria said, she worked with us. She was our BCBA, one of our BCBAs back in Virginia. And it's so cool when Chris, I was doing offering a course. And so when Chris reached out and he was interested, and we'll tell you more about that later, but it's like that small world story of, oh, by the way, I think you know our BCBA, right? Like it's always really cool when that works out. And you realize that like how small the world really is, and you know, even our ABA community, right? And it's like, oh wow, I know them. So it was really cool. So Chris, why don't you tell us a little bit about like your journey and yeah.
Yeah, like I said, we started 5-6 years ago, and everything started with the agency. Everything started off great. Very quickly got above 30 employees, and things were going really well. Everyone was happy. People were staying, getting great feedback. And then as we grew, elevated some people into leadership positions. And bottom line is that did not work out. And dropped down to like 25 employees. I'm scratching my head, wondering where things went wrong. Just started grabbing any CEUs on OBM that I could find. And I came across one that was called Values-Based Leadership. And it was a course with you, going through talking about values and incorporating them into your agency. And at the end, you would end up with a mission statement. And signed up for that one and got an email from you the morning that it was supposed to start saying that I was the only person that signed up. And absolutely to your credit, I think most people would have been like, oh, only one person signed up. We're going to postpone this or refund. And you didn't, and ended up with 8 weeks of individual coaching and an awesome mission statement.
Oh, thank you for that, Chris. Yeah, that was my first course with 3Pi Squared, and I was so in love with the whole idea, and I really wanted to be able to get that information out. And so I was a little bummed that only one person signed up, but I was actually ended up being two at the end of the day. But I was so thankful that you were willing to take that step to, okay, because that could kind of put you on the spot as well, instead of just like sitting back or watching the pre-recorded or, you know, classes later on, right? Like you were in the hot seat. But I really enjoyed that. It was a learning experience for me too. So thank you for being willing to participate in that for sure.
Yeah, it was a great experience, and that was about 2 years ago, and we've grown as an agency since then, and had some recent challenges that we can get into.
Yeah, definitely. So you said that you had, leading up to this last year, which had its challenges, well, yes, definitely get to that in a minute. You said that you had gotten to a point where you had built the leadership team and you felt like you had a pretty solid leadership team. That's something that we talk about a lot. And so I'm just curious if you would be willing to share, like, who was a part of your leadership team and like kind of what that, not mission, maybe mission, but like what everyone's like job was within that leadership team. If you would mind sharing with us what that looked like.
So yeah, we've kind of over-invested in our leadership team. I think it's a pretty big room for the number of total employees that we have. We are up to about 50 employees right now total. We have Maria's the overall director. We have a BCBA clinical director. We have two excellent billers. We have an HR director and two HR assistants.
That's a great team. That really covers all of the bases, right? So, okay, let's get to the fun part. Well, fun to hear, probably not very fun to be in your shoes, Chris, when all of this information was being brought to you. But you shared with me when we chatted the other week to catch up that you guys had quite a barrier in 2024. Would you like to tell us what that was?
Yeah. So, in addition to, you know, building everything out, like still retooling, when we did our course, that was about 2 years ago. But in the past year, our biggest barrier, has been maternity leaves. Everyone has like renicknamed the company AB Baby.
Perfect.
And we joke like, do not drink the water at company events.
Yes.
We had 9 babies among our team in the year 2024, including my wife, who had a baby in December. And she was previously running the HR department. So like, we had built out the HR department, fortunately, where they had gotten pretty independent before that. And then the final barrier was try to build out everything and build up the rest of leadership, and especially Maria's role. And she stepped in a lot recently. And basically, Maria's been running the company for the last couple of months while I've kind of been on quasi paternity leave, just with my keeping tabs on things, but not necessarily like completely gone.
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah.
Can you imagine?
No.
9 babies?
No. It's not allowed to happen.
Not allowed to happen. Well, I think if I remember correctly, your 3 BCBAs who were on, who were expecting, like, were all due relatively close together.
Yeah, we, one went out in, I think, July. We also, one of our billers, so we were down to 1 biller. And then we had 2 that were due late in the fall.
Yeah.
So we had a couple of months where we had 2 out at the same time. And they were both in the same, like, geographic area as well. And that's also the same time that my wife had her baby. So just a lot going on.
Yeah, that is a lot. That really is. I mean, as an ABA business, as any business owner, but, you know, we all know that ABA business has its own challenges, right? Like, very specific, like, intricacies. Like, you have to have the BCBA, the right amount of BCBAs to keep your techs and to keep the cases. And then billing, I mean, if you don't have someone billing, then you're not going to be able to keep the doors open, right? And of course, HR is added bonus of like so that's a lot. I would say that's a lot for any business to go through. What would you say, looking back on that, help? Two questions for you, because I'm so curious. What did you, looking back on it, what did you have in place that you're so thankful that you had in place going into that? And what thing maybe did you not have in place that, looking back, you want to get in place so that if this ever happens again, then you're prepared for it?
I'm curious. Maria might have a different answer than I might have. Definitely, we had already been building up the leadership team. And it just really kind of worked out, like the timing worked out. Things could have been spaced apart a little bit better, but I am so thankful for our leadership team is just so spot on with everything that they do. And everyone is so passionate about our mission. I'm just really thankful for them. If I didn't have the leadership team that we had, things would have definitely been a lot crazier. And the thing that could have gone better is, you know, shuffling cases when you've got 3 BCBAs. We've only got so many BCBAs. So 3 going out on maternity leave in 1 year is a lot of cases to shuffle. So having more options for clinical supervision would have made things even better. But Maria was able to manage with the pieces that she's had.
Yeah, do you have anything to add, Maria?
Yeah, so kind of like going to the forefront of that too. So maybe last fall, we pushed our clinical director into her role, and I went out on maternity leave. So we had to train her up really quick. So she was kind of pushed into that role, and then I came back. And essentially, I'd have to agree with Chris, the leadership team, having that built up, I think really saved us a lot. Because especially during the overlap maternity leaves and Chris being out, it kind of like forced us to just lean on each other, because there were plenty of days where, so me and my clinical director had to go out and do, you know, RBT supervisions in order to maintain that on some of those cases. And there were plenty of days where we were both out in the field at the same time. and, you know, something happened, and our admin team were able to lean on each other and even be able to provide them with a certain level of confidence in making decisions. If decisions had to be made, if we weren't able to answer them, that was really helpful. That I knew I could lean on someone else that day. If an emergency popped up, or if, you know, BCPA had an issue, I knew that they had someone else that they could go to if we were out and unavailable at sessions.
Yeah.
And wish we had more BCBAs to shuffle around.
Don't we all?
Yeah.
I think that when, I'm trying to remember, it's fuzzy, but we had maternity leave. We had BCBAs out on maternity leave. But I don't think we ever had more than one out at the same time. And that was intense, yeah. Right? I mean, there was a time where we had six BCBAs.
I think it was seven.
Seven?
Yeah.
And I believe during that time, one went out.
Mm-hmm.
And
our,
I mean,
biller, our biller went out.
And our biller went out, yeah. But I think that, I mean, it's just, like you said, it's like the shuffle, right?
Yeah.
And you're expecting them to, you know, to come back. So it's not like a case where you need to rehire for those cases. And so in some situations, you're just temporarily shuffling because maybe the original case loads fit like everyone's like skill sets and needs and everything, so it's like a temporary shuffle, and then as people are coming back in, you're like reshuffling. So that's quite a lot of pivoting that you guys had to do, huh?
Yeah, it's been a caseloads have been shuffling a lot. So, but I think it's also been helpful. Our clinical director has done an excellent job of keeping a pulse on all the cases and making sure that everybody is up to date on everything. And so it was actually very easy for us to jump in and provide supervision and pick up. There wasn't, you know, cases were running great. She made sure that the BCBAs had everything that they needed to run those cases and that they were set up for their absences as well. So that, I think that was a huge help as well.
It's amazing. I see you like scribbling millions of questions over there. Do you have any?
No, I'm just curious, like how did you go about handling it with the clients? I know with our company, right? Like BCBAs and parents really get attached. And so I assume that was probably hard for them too, to get a new BCBA and things are changing. How did that go?
Most of them take it pretty well. We've been through a couple with myself, but most of them understood that it's a short-term thing, and we did overlapping before. So the new BCBA did some shadowing and overlapping. Obviously, you're going to hit some road bumps and stuff, so we make sure that our clinical director is in touch with the parents and the supervisors, and they know on a regular basis they can call the clinical director or email us with anything, so we've been able to handle any issues that have popped up.
Yeah. Did you have any other questions for now?
So I not on having nine people out at the same time, no, but like when Chris, you were mentioning, you know, you had some issues with, you thought you had built a leadership team, you had 30 staff, it dropped down for reasons I don't know yet, but and went down to 25, and I'm just curious, like at that point, because I think this is a problem that a lot of BCBAs have, is selecting the leadership team. What do you think that, what were the mistakes, if you could go back, that you may do differently? How looking, you know, hindsight is 20/20, obviously, what qualities, after doing this twice now, what qualities do you think you need in your leadership team? How do you build them so they can all work together? Because, you know, sometimes leaders, they have a hard time working together, right? So I'm just curious your thoughts on that.
Well, I definitely, it's not like there was a point where I made a decision where I'm like, oh, this definitely feels wrong. but definitely did not have the right people in the right positions. And I certainly hope that no one else has this issue, but definitely had issues with people in the leadership team presenting how they were doing their jobs accurately to me. And I would say that one thing that I would do differently is, and hindsight is 2020, but, and basically running the whole agency by yourself, like, you've got to pick and choose what your priorities are. And I thought I had people that I trusted and ended up, I didn't have, they couldn't be trusted. So I took my fingers off the pulse on the job that they were doing and focused on other things. And cracks started showing, cases leaving unexpectedly, staff leaving unexpectedly, that kind of just snowballed. And I would say, you know, the buck always stops with you. And, you know, at the end of the day, you're the one that's got to clean up that mess. And you're the one that's responsible for it, for whoever you put in the job. So you've got to make sure that they're doing the job that you expect.
Yeah, I'm super impressed at the leadership team that you have now. Like, the fact that I don't even know them. I don't know anything about them. Mommy, I know Maria, but, and she's amazing. But, like, the fact that they were able to go through, like, that year of some, I mean, that's tough. I mean, we kind of, like, we're laughing, joking, oh, man, not babies. It's not even fathomable to me, really. Cause that's just a lot of change in one team in a year, right? Mm-hmm. And so, but it sounds like you guys had really great communication across team members. And I'm wondering, like, there must be some, trying to think how to say it, like, some really clear understanding of what's expected from each person and what their job, I don't know, but, like, it sounds really almost too good to be true, right? Mm-hmm. that like, oh, the leadership is so strong and they're able to work through all of these, because it's not like, oh, my leadership team is so strong and it's been a great, beautiful year. It's like, okay, there's a hard year, mm-hmm. but they were able to communicate and work together and pick up the slack for each other and communicate. Like, so what did you do right? Tell us the secrets.
Yeah, let's get into each role a little bit more.
Yeah.
Because I'm sure a lot of people are like, wow, that's a lot of people in leadership for such a small company. Like, you've got a BCBA owner, you've got a BCBA director, you've got a BCBA clinical director, you've got a bunch of other BCBAs, you've got three people in HR, you've got two billers. So we can break down, like, why we have so many people.
Yeah.
And part of that, too, is we do have a built-in capacity for a little bit of growth at the moment. So we can definitely handle a few more cases than we currently have. I'd much rather have people and be able to take cases on than be like, I probably overcorrected where we didn't have the right people and we didn't have enough people in leadership before. So there weren't, like, redundancies. And now there's kind of, like, our billers are billing, but they're also taking intake calls as well. Mm-hmm. And our HR team, they're doing normal HR stuff. In Pennsylvania, we have some regulations that are kind of onerous that we need a lot of documentation for. So they've got so many hours a week that they have to devote to that. They're doing interviews. We always want to make sure that we have enough people to do interviews, because if we don't have enough RBTs or we're not getting the right RBTs, that's going to create its own problems. Our HR team is also, they spend a lot of time doing regular check-ins with all of our staff to make sure that we're not just hearing from the BCBAs that, like, oh, this staff's doing great, they love their job, and then they unexpectedly leave. And it's like, well, the BCBA wasn't really seeing that accurately. So we're getting a bunch of different information, and they're doing a lot more than like what a normal like role is.
That makes me so happy. I heard you say, I love that you're doing check-ins. I know, I think, I feel like we talked about this. I remember talking, it was part of the values course, but I believe we may have at least touched on check-ins. But I was just talking with another business owner, and I mentioned to her about checking in and how to do check-ins. And she was like, yeah, I don't know. That seems a little much, right? And I'm like, no, it really works.
Yeah.
I got all giddy and excited when I heard that you're doing check-ins and that's part of what's making it work. Cause it's like, it's not necessarily like numbers data, but it is like, you know, like in my brain, it's like a nice check mark, and it's reinforcing to hear that. Did you have?
It makes a real difference because if, you know, I know I'm paying someone, you know, as an owner, you know, it costs so much to have someone and have that be a part of their role. So we're literally spending so much money on check-ins, which we could save by not doing them. But if that helps reduce turnover, yeah. That helps implement our mission by making sure that the people that are out there doing their job are happy. And have all the resources that they need, then an ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure.
So exciting. I just love hearing that. So now you're kind of like, okay, we've gone through this year. Hopefully no one else puts in for maternity leave. Of course, you'll be happy for them if they do and all that jazz, whatever. But still, like, nobody's out this whole next year, let's say. And I know that you had said before when we were chatting that you're kind of ready for that next level of growth, but you know, it's like, how do you do that? What's the next step? And do you put the, you know, all the eggs into which basket? Do you start to look for BCBAs to hire or techs or clients? And I know that you already have like the capacity to bring on more clients, and I think that's brilliant. I think there's a lot to that, and maybe we could touch on that a little bit too. But I guess what I'm just bringing this next up, because I don't you weren't there when Chris and I talked the other day, and we were just talking about his journey and where he was, where he is, and where he wants to be. And that was one of the things that you mentioned, Chris, was talking about like the next steps of growth. And so this is where, like, this is one of Steven's big areas of expertise. And so did you have any questions, or did you want to go there next?
Yeah, I mean, we can. I'm just curious, like, as you're building your leadership team this time, what qualities?
Oh, that's right.
Like, are there soft skills that you think leadership needs? Is there, like what qualities allow you to pick someone to join the leadership team, and how do you foster that growth as they become a leader?
Good question.
That is a good question. And I don't have like a black and white answer for that. I think that a lot of the growth in our leadership team has just kind of been organic. Like Maria started off as a BCBA, and then she moved to clinical director, and then we had to train another clinical director, and it didn't make any sense to, like, she did a great job, didn't make any sense to bump her back down to BCBA. Made more sense to elevate Maria to be the overall director. And I can't say that there's like one thing that I'm looking for. I think probably the biggest thing is just passion about doing the best job that we can. And the ability to support and develop the people underneath you and the people around you. And just a lot of, it's not like you snap your fingers and like, oh, someone's good in that role. Like, right. There's, we spent a lot of time one-on-one, two-on-one meetings with the people that we're elevating, talking about, you know, what they want out of the position and making sure it works for all of us and giving them the support that they need.
Yeah. So much communication.
Yeah.
Great.
Yeah.
Like, and I know I jumped us ahead to growth, mm-hmm. but I also have another question about where we're at right now. Like, that costs money.
Yeah.
So I could put myself in the shoes of another ABA business leader who's listed in this and was like, yeah, Chris must be some kind of like millionaire or something to have all this extra money laying around to pay for all these non-billables. Yeah, how do you do it? How do you pay for check-ins, and how do you, you know, pay to have people on staff who don't have, like, they're not full to the brim with billables, and you're obviously your team's communicating, so that's time too.
Yeah.
So how do you do it?
April and I are so honored to have Margin Keeper sponsor this podcast.
Running an ABA business comes with its share of challenges: managing clients, staff, insurance, the list goes on.
One thing you shouldn't add to your stress, bookkeeping. That's where Margin Keepers comes in.
They're specialists in ABA businesses, which means they understand exactly what we need.
With Margin Keepers handling your finances, you can focus on what really matters, your clients and your practice's growth.
They're more than just bookkeepers. They're lifesavers in the financial world of ABA.
So for peace of mind and expert financial management,
turn to Margin Keepers. It's a decision that will lift a weight off of your shoulders.
Check out Margin Keepers at www.marginkeepers.com and see how they can help your business thrive.
I will say our definitely a blessing and a curse at the moment is definitely the financial impact of so many salaries that are not contributing directly towards billables. Mm-hmm. But like I said, we are poised for growth at the moment. So we're kind of like, you got to build the roads first before you build the houses.
Yes.
And I will say that probably our model is not, you know, not everyone can just go out and do what we do. And I think we have, like, our business plan in our area is very specific for the needs in our area. Mm-hmm. And, you know, if you have an agency that's funding is MA and the rates are low, definitely going to have some different challenges than we have.
Yeah.
And when did you know it was time? Because you do have multiple billers, multiple HR, when do you know it's time to add another person to the team? How do you make that decision?
Maria, do you want to take this one?
I was going to say, it's a really good question. I can kind of answer it from like the like BCBA, like supervisor standpoint of when. So similar to how like our HR does check-ins with our direct staff, our clinical director schedules check-ins with the BCBAs and supervisors at like a rate that's appropriate for them. So if it's like a newer BCBA, it's like a weekly check-in or, you know, something like that. But we, Kate and I, our clinical director, in constant contact of like weighing the caseloads and things like that of like, okay, who's maxed out? Who is able to get like all their duties done and you know, in a timely manner and within the parameters, complete all their tasks, and kind of constantly weighing where can we add another caseload. So I think it comes down to, I think we've got it down a little bit of, we know essentially when everybody is at like an even tempo on their workload and when everybody's maxed out, because we keep in such close contact and check-ins with everybody. So I don't think there's an exact answer to it. But I think it comes down to, if we're seeing burnout or if we're seeing things not being completed that like maybe they were being completed at a certain time frame before, I think with billing, we're probably getting to a point where we're starting to add clients and continuing to grow. And like, can we continue to bill out at the rate that we're billing out with two billers as we continue to grow and add clients? So I don't think there's an exact answer for it, but I think just constantly feeling out and knowing where we can add more and who cannot add more to their plate is, I think we have a lot of transparency with that. And so, yeah, not an exact answer, but kind of a little bit of insight.
Yeah, I was working with a company and she was like, yeah, I have this director. She's awesome. But like, she's constantly, lately, she's been missing her treatment plans and things like that. And I'm like, okay, how about we have a conversation and see, like, what are the barriers? How much is she actually working? And it turned out she wasn't working 40 hours a week anymore. She was working 70, right? And it's like, okay. So we missed the gun on adding somebody else. So how do we change this, right? And yeah. So I'm curious, like, constant check-ins I think are great. Do you have something in place that for like some self-advocacy for the team? Is there a place in it for that?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's another, as you were saying that kind of popped into my head of that we've built relationships and we've built trust within our supervisory team and our leadership team that it's definitely come to the point where they're like, hey, like I have this barrier going on right now. Like I cannot take on anymore. Especially managing all the maternity leaves. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, to go back to work 3 months and postpartum, and a lot of our supervisors are not at the capacity that they were before because you now have like a family to manage and, you know, outside things to manage. So I think just constantly keeping a pulse on that has helped, along with the self-advocacy of they trust the leadership enough to be like, hey, I think I'm at my point here, or hey, I can take more, or I have too much going on right now.
Yeah, I think having that trust that you can advocate for yourself and you're going to get an answer, I think is really important, right? It's more than just, oh yeah, our door is always open, right? And like, why did you come in here into this open door? Like that's different, right? So I think that, yeah, having that self-advocacy and that trust in your leadership team is really important. You have to earn that trust, right? So
we've been an accidental case study in psychological safety with an A phase, a B phase, and then an A phase, where like when we first opened and I was running everything and I tried to be as supportive as possible because I've been in that role. And I know home services are challenging to go in someone's home and to do up to 40 hours a week of RBT services and to work with kids who are completely nonverbal and engaging in high levels of behaviors. You know, I know that in order for those kids to be successful, BCBAs need to have low caseloads. They need to feel supported. They're not going to know everything. They need to be able to learn and to have other people to lean on. And then we kind of lost that, and then we got it back again. And it starts with leadership. You know, if leadership can't talk to each other and support each other and communicate openly, then how can we expect those under us to be able to do that?
So how many, and I'll probably ask you this again, but what is your ratio of BCBAs to techs?
Normally our supervisors have six-ish cases.
I know within home, it's a way different to have the same level of support as you would in a clinic. And I'm just curious, how do you all approach that with your techs and your supervisors? Because one of the things that I heard when we had our company, and I hear this now, is like, I'm alone, I'm all by myself, I don't feel supported. So how are you all doing that with your in-home model?
So we keep our caseloads manageable. So we try to aim to have a BCBA out twice in the home or daycare, wherever they're at, a week. We also try to support that with the HR check-ins as well. But I think it's, I think as long as we keep that supervisor tech relationship as supported as possible, and we also make it very clear to our techs and direct staff that like they can communicate to us about anything, so that all their communication gets reinforced. So, you know, when they do communicate with us a problem that, you know, or anything good, things like that. Something else that we do is we have one RVT or BT to a case. So they're not going to multiple cases a day and traveling and, you know, kind of getting burned out in that capacity. We also know that this job is really hard during full-time hours in certain situations. We try to have as much transparency, myself and the clinical director, with like the environment of the home and external factors, whatever that may be, a sibling, language barriers, you know, anything like that, that may make it more difficult. Maybe there's a high rate of behaviors. We, between clinical and HR, we just make sure that we keep, you know, an extra eye on those situations. But yeah, and then we've been trying to branch out and do a little bit more of like activities with the supervisors, so that they, you know, can meet each other and things like that. Sorry, the direct staff, not the supervisors. So the BTs and RVTs can have, you know, a time to engage with each other. But
yeah, yeah, that is one of the tough things about in-home for sure. All right.
Yeah, we can move on to scaling if you want.
Sure.
Yeah.
We just had did it just air? Yeah, yeah. It just aired. Yeah. I told Chris about it, but it just aired this Friday, where we had Matt with ABA Digital Marketing and Joanna from Margin Keepers, and we talked about scaling and how to scale and when not to scale, and it was like the 101 like basics on it, right? But I think it's really cool that you guys are kind of at that point where, okay, you're ready to start growing, or not start growing, but like continue growing, but you kind of took a pause there for a minute and now like go to that next level. And, so I was really excited about this conversation with the four of us, because, it's something that Stephen talks about a lot and has a lot of good info too. So before we start talking more about growth, I did want to touch on something really quick with Chris, because you were talking about how you have plans of how you're going to work yourself out of this company and how you are in the spot right now with having a new baby at home and being able to step back. And you know, maybe that was planned, I don't know, but like how, you know, the fact that you're able to step back and take that paternity leave and not have to be you know, running the clinic or running the agency day by day, I think that kind of leads into like scaling and growth, right? Like knowing as the owner where you want to go, and then also the second part, where do you want the company to go?
I've been trying to step back for a while. Those first couple years as a startup were challenging. I was literally doing everything by myself. And we got up to like 30 employees, and I'm interviewing techs. I'm responding to like HR stuff. I'm going through getting our state license, which they threw at us at the same time. It was a lot. I mean, just like creating your own website. Like, I'm like, oh, this will take an hour. I've seen commercials as like, do your own website in an hour. Like, no, it takes, that was like a whole week of 12-hour days to like get that right. It was a lot. I've been trying to step back for a while. And the first iteration of our leadership team, I had stepped back way too soon and things went awry. And we built the leadership team up better than ever. more competent than ever, more compassionate than ever. And then I found myself where, like, I feel good about these guys. I feel good about the place we're in, and I just can't quite do it. And then I've been kind of forced to do it. And probably if we didn't have, if my wife and I didn't have our, the ninth baby, I would probably still be doing more than I need to do. It's hard. It's hard to step back, especially if you've tried and watched things fall apart, and then you've had to spend even more time and energy trying to put it back together again. It's hard.
Yeah, I imagine that's hard.
So what do you, you know, something that we work with some of our customers with is, what is your exit strategy? So, you know, some people are like, I want to go live on an island and I just want this place to run by itself. Other people are like, okay, I eventually want to sell this. Or some people are like, okay, you're going to have to drag my body out of this office, right? Like, that I'm going to live here forever. I'm just curious, like, do you have kind of your goal on how this looks when you're ready to kind of move on to the next step?
Basically, what's going on right now, where, like, I'm spending a couple of hours a week keeping tabs on things, I'm jumping in here and there as needed, it's kind of been my best case scenario. I'm not interested in, you know, selling or anything like that. I'm just interested in having the best ABA agency that we can have, and having the best people running it and the best people working for us. And wherever that takes us, great. If I'd like to have, I'd like to have a few more clients by the end of this year, because we have the capability to be effective with a few more clients. If we had 20 referrals right now, and we decided to take them all, that would impact the quality of our services.
Right. And so are you thinking, I want to double my size? Are you thinking, I want to move into another state? Or are you just thinking, okay, this is where I want to be, and I need a few more clients to fill our caseload, and I'm just going to kind of float here for a while.
Yeah, I think in the short term, like in the next year, we've been trying to expand a little bit, because had an ABA student that is in a slightly different geographic area, like close enough, but a little bit far away from where we normally service. And we were able to bring her on and have her fill in a little bit with our maternity leave issue. And we've been trying to get some cases there, and it's actually been a little bit more challenging to get cases in that area than I expected. Talking about growth, we've been kind of dancing around this, but we have like three levers that we have. We have BCBA case capacity, RBTs that can staff those cases, and clients. And the challenge always has been trying to keep those three as close together as possible.
Right.
2 years ago, when we had excessive turnover, I had a whole bunch of clients with no RBTs running them. So then we found ourselves, you know, we had cases to fill, and you relax your standards a little bit. Some of those people work out and some of those people don't work out. And then you kind of get in this runaway turnover thing, where the more turnover you have, the more turnover you're going to have.
Yes.
Until you just fill up with quality people. And in 2024, with all the maternity leaves, our biggest challenge has been BCBA case capacity. So we've had times where we've had referrals and we haven't had the capacity to open those cases. And now that we're kind of coming out of that, 2025 is looking like our biggest challenge this year is going to be clients. And we only take commercial insurance and we're only taking kids that need intensive services. Where we are, there's a whole bunch of other service providers that don't have the language building expertise that our clinicians have. So if we have someone that just needs part-time services, we don't feel bad about not boarding that client because there's so many other options for them in the area. But yeah, 2025, definitely getting clients that need our expertise is definitely going to be the biggest barrier for us.
And what have you been doing in that area? Like, what is your normal process to acquire clients? Has it just been referral based at this point, or are you doing anything else other than that?
Maria's been doing a whole bunch of stuff while this, while we're like, oh, we've got, it's been, we got two BCBAs coming up that are going to be out at the same time. And we're focused on like moving things around. And it's like, they're coming back.
Right.
Got caseloads to fill. So I think our biggest thing is we're just trying to get our name out there, whether that is on Facebook, you know, different like autism walks and stuff that are coming up. We have tried to even just go to like job fairs and things like that. We have been trying to create relationships with referral sources that do diagnose and provide the diagnosis and the psych evals. Word of mouth, you know, we have some referrals from the schools that we work with and other service providers that we work with. So making sure that we're keeping those relationships. I know recently we got a referral from another service provider in this like a similar field, and I was like, hey, like let's go like give her brochures and make sure that you know, we keep that relationship up with them, because she may service, you know, other people that may, you know, want a referral. We have word of mouth referrals from current clients and families. We've had plenty of families that have been with us for 5 years now. So we've created a lot of like good relationships with those families. And yeah, honestly, just at this point, doing anything we can to put our name out there and that we have openings and we have the capacity to fill some caseloads. So
one thing I often recommend is like your local chamber of commerce, reaching out to them. It's typically maybe like $100, $200 a year. And then what they'll have is like education groups and healthcare groups that you can join. And it's, you may, if they don't know the person that you're wanting to reach out to, they probably know someone who knows that person. And it's just a different relationship that you're fostering there versus going to the office at, like they're working right now, you know what I mean? And so that can definitely help with that. The other thing that, you know, was part of our podcast that we did, the scaling podcast, was just doing your radius, like how far do you all work? And then like, any daycares, pediatricians, right? Like mommy and me programs, things like that. And just calling them up and saying, hey, we would love to work with our, you know, local providers. This is what we do. We're willing to do some free parent trainings or free courses for your staff. That can really help with those local networking.
That's what I was gonna add in. On top of just, hey, here we are, we're looking for clients, but how can we help, right? What can we do to support the community and support your area? And if there's a specific cluster that you're looking for clients in, and that, you know, to support the staff in that, that's able to work in that area, you know, really looking at that area and seeing if there is a need that you can, you know, that you can fulfill, even if it's a educational, you know, webinar or in-person training for parents, or, you know, especially since you guys are really working on like language development and in that area, like what's something that was, it would really honestly be relatively easy for you to pull out really quick and do. It's not going to take a lot of extra time to prep and plan for, but that you're passionate about and that you can offer the community even for free, right? Just to get, just another way to get your name out there.
And then, you know, obviously the other thing is doing some Facebook or Google ads, but I don't know. I mean,
Matt has some different, like Matt has, what is the term for it? Local outreach. Is that what it's called? Mm-hmm. And one of the things that he said, that he says often is that, you know, make your list of like 200.
Yeah.
In fact, I think a reel just came out today or yesterday from our previous podcast. It was like, make your list of 200 calls to make. And I'm like, I don't know. That seems crazy, right?
Yeah.
But it, you know, he's gotten a lot of like data that's really,
yeah, really helpful. It takes
200 to get like the few, right? That you really need.
To make those meaningful relationships. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And like his thing is, you haven't done local outreach until you've hit 200. And then when you get to 200, do 200 more. Right. So that's his thing. And like this,
unless you're in rural Pennsylvania, then maybe it's like 100.
Maybe
I don't know.
It is. Yeah. But like to have some kind of an impact, you do have to, like, this is a numbers game, and making those connections is important. If you're going to do Facebook marketing, that does take some time, right? The other thing that you could probably do is like SEO, if you've done anything like that, that may be helpful. And my thing also is like, if you have a team that is willing to do some YouTube videos, and then that's just a library that the parents can see and your speech and OT can see. They do have to be somewhat professional, obviously, right? You want
you want to put like a good feeling out there. You don't want to be completely like you know, unprofessional.
Yes, like me. And
I mean, we started our videos very unprofessional, and we still built a community. Yeah, but you got to start somewhere. But
yes, yeah. So that can be very helpful. They'll see the faces of the BCBAs that they're going to work with. And they're going to be like, I need that person. They're going to see your authenticity, your
passion.
Your passion.
Did you say passion?
Yes. And so that can be very helpful. And then share those with the speech therapist, the occupational therapist, you know, a QR code or something like that, where they can easily give that to the parents and say, hey, you have to check these people out. They're awesome. Right. So that's another way to do things. I don't know if that elicits any questions, feel free to, you know, share.
We are doing a lot of that stuff. We found that clients are like dropping off during our onboarding. And our process right now is they've got to like, we send them documents and they got to fill them out and then scan them and send them back to us. So, we're working with like new software to try and streamline that.
Yeah, that definitely can help. Yeah, making that as easy as possible. And maybe even using your team, if they have the capacity, to kind of walk them through it, right? Where I know you said that you have that intake, so that helping them through it can probably be, so you don't lose as many clients going through the intake process.
Do you have any more questions about growth and like what the direction?
I mean, we could talk about other things if you want. I don't know if
you guys have any questions. Is there anything that you guys have questions about that, or anything that you want to make sure that we discuss while we have time together today? Yeah.
The one thing that I did want to note that I brought up, we had two BCBA interviews last week, and I was just kind of like regathering like some information and stuff about our company, and I never did this... I never looked at this before, But we have like 9 total supervisors. So that is, you know, BCBAs or an assistant behavior consultant that is under BCBA. 5 of those 9 supervisors have actually worked with us as RBTs and gone through the student process with us. So aside from myself and the clinical director and I think one other BCBA, all of our like current BCBAs have gone through the student process with us, worked as RBTs and BTs, have either worked with myself, Chris, or our clinical director. So I think that really goes into being able for us to trust each other. So if need to push them into, you know, a difficult conversation, or whether that be with a parent, or push them clinically of, you know, running certain programs, or, you know, going out and encouraging them to, you know, expand their clinical knowledge, I think that is a huge factor in pushing the growth. And also, I think we have a shared passion for the field. And they, I think, trust us in turn because they've seen us do the job. They've seen us sit on the floor and show them how to do what we're asking them to do. And I think that that goes a long way of they're like, oh, yeah, like I can trust this person because they've sat right next to me and helped me through a difficult situation. And I can trust their feedback and, you know, run with that. You know, it's their turn to run with it and do with it. So that was something that I like kind of like realized in the last week that I hadn't really realized before that I thought was really cool. So.
Yeah. And I think selling that too, right? Like telling your parents about like this, we've been together forever, right? Like this team is trusted and we've been through so much together. I think that's something that definitely is worth trying to use as part of your marketing, right?
Yeah, I think even looking for new staff, I have to do it just right. Because some people might be like, okay, well, that could be a barrier for like, oh, okay, I'm not going to be in like, how am I going to feel coming into such an already tight knit family feel here if I'm an outsider? Mm-hmm. But maybe even like, what are you going to set up to help a new person, an outsider, right? Yeah. How are you going to help welcome them and like, welcome them into your community and your culture that you have in a way that, you know, of course trust comes over time, but in a way that's going to like foster that as much as possible. But I think that's super important that your BCBAs are getting down on the floor and playing and working because, you know, over the years that was a barrier.
Yeah.
If there were a BCBA, who was more interested in sitting behind their computer at a table and watching. Yeah. And so that was, that's always a really, a big factor. And you were asking earlier, like, as far as what are you looking for in a leadership team? Mm-hmm. And I would say that, like, even your BCBAs who aren't necessarily within a leadership team still have leadership, like, but you know, leadership ability or they're still part of leadership because they're, you know, helping the line staff and the techs and all, right? They're still part of that. They may not be the leadership team, but they're still very much a part of that.
Totally.
And I do think that is a huge takeaway that you got. And I agree with that, that, you know, if my BCBA is willing to get down and run this program and also, you know, play and be silly and whatever on the floor, then it's going to make it a little bit easier.
Yeah, it's going to make it easier. Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah.
That's so cool. I'd love to hear that. That's really cool.
And the other thing that I would mention as far as scaling is just making sure that your wage ranges are appropriate based on the rates that you're getting. And if you would like, I can share. We built a wage range calculator based on the utilization of your staff and your the clients that you have. So I can share that with you and you can check that out and see, because that obviously, as I'm sure you're well aware, like wages is probably 90-ish% of all of your of your expenses. So knowing that that's dialed in, where you can still give wage increases, but you know, maintain a level of profitability that's easy to scale and provide those trainings and oversight that you're doing, right? Because that's an issue that a lot of smaller ABA companies have, and even larger companies, where they're competing with other ABA agencies in the area, and well, they're paying $22 an hour, so I've got to do 23, and you kind of get into this bidding war, and now you can't afford to keep these RBTs or BCBAs on. So that's just something that is definitely worthwhile to check. Yeah,
that's been a challenge, because we've interviewed a few outside BCBAs over the past year, and some of their salary expectations are a little bit higher than we were willing to go, especially for a brand new BCBA. And there's a lot, I think it's going to be a big problem in our field, that a lot of younger BCBAs are going to be burning themselves out too quick, because they're seeing that dollar sign amount and they're making decisions almost entirely on that, and they don't understand that it's going to cost them their evenings, it's going to cost them their weekends, it's going to cost them their sanity. And our agency is built around trying to make the maximum progress that we can with the kids that we're working with. And we know that we need to keep turnover low. We know that we need to keep our caseloads low. We need to keep support high. Because if we have a new BCBA, you know, a new tech coming in and out every couple of weeks, every couple of months, then some things move forward, but a lot of things get lost in that shuffle.
Yeah.
So it's had to, like, stop ourselves from, like, chasing some of these BCBAs that we interviewed, just because it seems like we have different values.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think it's good to know your values, right? And so what is important to you? And that's not going to be important to everyone, and that's fine, right? But, like, and
so knowing,
yes, knowing your values and what is important to you, it sounds like that is what I take from this, right? Like, you know, when you had 30 and things kind of took a, you know, you went backwards maybe a little bit, and then bringing in those values so you had a firm understanding of what is important to you. Now, it seems as though without much effort, it seems as though your team, you've been able to grow that team with those values, and it just organically happens. Is there anything that we missed that you wanted to ask, or is there anything that you would like to say before we leave?
No, I feel like we could dig deeper into a whole bunch of different things, but yes. I feel like we had a great talk.
Yeah, and if off camera you all want to come on again and actually dig into the numbers and things like that, obviously that is not appropriate for a podcast, we totally are willing to do that, and, you know, kind of get into it a little bit more meaningful. But
absolutely.
I think that a lot of ABA practices struggle in these areas. When is it the right time to scale, and how do I know, like, how to let off, like, how to step back? And I think you've been able to do that, you know, and I think that's great that you've been able to do that, because many BCBAs, you know, they're working 80, 85 hours a week, right, trying to maintain this company. And then their leadership sees, okay, to be a leader in this company, you have to work 85 hours a week, right? And that doesn't do any, it's not helping anyone when you're working that much. Your staff are going to suffer, you're going to suffer, and your clients are ultimately going to suffer as well. They're not going to benefit, right? I think that what you've been able to foster is amazing. So, great.
Yeah, you can do that for a little bit, but it's
yes.
not sustainable.
Yes.
Definitely, Marie and Caitlin picked things up over the last couple of months, but knowing that was a short-term solution and not a long-term solution.
Yeah. I think that it for many BCBA business owners, it's a short-term situation that doesn't ever stop.
I was just going to say, and I don't want to go off into a whole other conversation as we're wrapping up today, but it is very often that we see, that mentality of, oh, it's just for the first year or two. I can pull this pace for the first year or two.
And then 5 years later, they're still there.
It's important to have something going into it, knowing, okay, what are my, even if it's something as such as like, what are my red flags? When I get to this point where I'm feeling this in my body or I'm, you know, whatever, right? Like, then I need to evaluate. Hopefully you can stop and evaluate before it gets too bad. But like, yeah, totally. I think it's important because we go into it thinking, okay, you know, I'll sleep later, you know, I'll push through. We'll get through this year or two. Mm-hmm. And then 5 years in, they're just pretty miserable. So none of us want to land there. Right.
No. I mean, if you're working that much, you're spending a lot of time being reactive and not 100% being proactive.
Yep.
100%. Yep. That is like, that's a perfect quote to end the session on.
Sounds good.
Definitely. There's so much truth to that. Well, Chris and Maria, I thank you so much. It was like so exciting to get to sit and chat with you guys and to see your face again, Maria. And I'm so happy for where you guys are. It's like, I just got so many warm and fuzzy feelings, like when listening to where you guys are in the company. And I know where I'm gonna look into a job if I'm ever living in Pennsylvania for sure. But thank you again. And I look forward to talking to you again soon.
Thank you for listening to our podcast. Hopefully it was helpful. If you would like to gain access to this entire video and actually our entire library of videos, please join our ABA Business Leaders membership. You can find that at www.3pisquare.com.